Good morning. You're in tune with What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Justin Farrar, Fred Mills, and Bob Hinkle. Today, we're taking a cue from a listener who was writing in to What It Is at WNCW.org, telling us that we needed some paraphernalia, some swag, some items with What It Is on it, t-shirts, ball caps, thumb drives, and whatnot.
Rolling papers.
And it brought to mind,
rolling papers, yeah. Yeah.
And it brought to mind all of the various things in music history and merchandising, which is basically just as old as recorded music itself.
Well, I was fortunate enough to be in Europe with the Stones in 1980, and I still wake up, have nightmares about the logo with the lips and the tongue. I mean, that thing became, I mean, it could have won a race for prime minister in half the countries we played.
That's
in
as
that
recognizable
logo.
A logo as Coca-Cola or Pepsi, isn't it?
Pretty much. Yeah. It certainly was at that time, anyway. And then, you know, people use merchandising for other purposes. My old buddy Harry Chapin wrote a poetry book. And he couldn't get anybody to put it out, so he put it out himself, and he made it the sales of it be a part of his World Hunger thing, and for probably 2 years running, he had the largest selling poetry book in the world.
But sell it at concerts
because he was selling it only at concerts, and people were buying it up as fast as they could print it and get it to him.
And nowadays, that's a very common thing.
Yeah.
You'll see an artist will have a book, you know, and I'm not talking about the tour program, but a book or a limited edition tour-only CD that they're selling.
Right.
Or a book of sketches, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, here's Pioneer.
Another sort of take on that is Kenny Rogers did a book called Making It in Music, which it's exactly what it sounds like it is. It's kind of silly. But the book was put out by a major publisher and was an instant stiff. It kind of instantly fell right off the edge of the world.
Kind of like that book of poetry that Jewel put out a few years ago.
What book was that?
We won't get into that.
Right. But Kenny was concerned about that, and we hired some people, and we called hundreds of bookstores, and we found out why it wasn't working. They didn't know where to put it. They didn't know whether it was a biography or a how-to or a music book. Same thing. Kenny bought them all, but he bought, I've forgotten how many, but it could have been as many as 100,000 copies of this book back from the publisher, put them on sale at concerts, and sold that 100,000 and another 100,000 really quickly.
What was the markup at the concert? Was it like $50 or something? No, concert prices.
The concert was, it was your usual, you know, concert markup, sort of silly.
Well, let's think about what is the definition of merchandising. Sell and to brand. That's the...
Right.
A concert audience is a captive audience. You know, you've heard the whole thing, you know, saw the concert, bought the t-shirt, and people just take that to heart. They've seen the greatest show of their life. They're walking out, and there's the merch table. I mean, what more natural way to move product? And I don't mean that in a cynical way.
No, right.
I mean, nowadays you have bands selling a CDR of the show you've just seen as you sign up midway through the concert, and you get it on the way out.
Or you can just get, say, a free download of some of the songs.
Exactly. But it used to be all you could get was a t-shirt and maybe a poster. So merchandising has come a long way. And what's interesting is I wonder why it took so long for the artists in the touring industry to realize how much they could exploit that need of fans to have a physical artifact to take home with them. Obviously, back in the 70s, you don't have the instant CD pressing, but it took a while for us to get to the point where you've got, you know, coffee mugs and probably caps came along real early, and buttons. Everybody probably remembers all the little 1-inch and 1.5-inch buttons that really got popular during punk and new wave. But nowadays you've got, if it can be merchandised, they will come, as the saying goes.
Right. Well, part of it, I think, not all of it, but I think a part of it was same reason that no artist was doing commercials in the 70s and the 60s because it was selling out.
Oh, it's uncool.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I mean, it's always been around. I mean, the Beatles was merchandise. I mean, the amount of merchandise produced around the Beatles, tablecloths, napkins, talcum powder, dolls, and no one ever really called them out for selling out.
I think I don't know when that started, though. I think the Beatles had a time to become the Beatles, and then it started.
Well, there was also a certain level of merchandising. For example, you had, say, the Beatles lunchbox, and that competed on a certain level, but that wouldn't be what you would see at the concerts. These were actually those were probably more instance of a product licensor licensing the rights to do this.
You can still buy those in the hardware store in Black Mountain today.
Okay, let's go, man.
They had quite a lot at their concerts, from what I understand. Actually, a lot of the stuff you mentioned were at Beatle concerts.
Really?
The buttons and the all kinds of. But, you know, they were kind of innovators in that sense.
They were. It's true.
Yeah, but Bob's right. I mean, there was. We've talked about on what it is before about the era when it was very uncool for a band to cut a commercial. Because it was seen as selling out, you know, and music should be pure and non-commercial and everything, which is a bunch of hooey
when you consider it as commercial in the first place.
Still, that was the image that was projected, and especially during the hippie and counterculture era, there was no way you were going to be perceived as selling out. It was something as crass as merchandise, but that kind of thinking has evolved, especially when you. You've got the
Consider the Grateful Dead, as we talked about earlier.
Grateful Dead were a great example of people that merchandise skillfully and tactfully too. I remember being a member of the Grateful Dead fan club. You sent in, I don't know, something like $5 a year, and you would get these limited edition little 33 and RPM 45s, and you could buy their albums direct. And then a few years later, when this, we get to the CD era, and they're doing Dick's Picks, the concert series. Strictly by mail order. The only place you can get it. Can't buy them in stores for a long time. And nobody ever accused the Dead of selling out.
Because that was good consumption.
It was good consumption,
whereas,
yes.
You know, what your parents were doing was bad.
Bad consumption. Bad consumption.
Yeah. Buying the Neil Diamond
bad consumption.
T-shirt is bad.
Don't buy the Neil Diamond denim jacket. No.
But buying the $60 Grateful Dead tapestry is
that's
sticking
cool.
it to the man.
That's cool.
But a lot of this has to do, too, with just where the artist starts, where the band starts with, say, their name and their logo. I remember in high school just meticulously copying all sorts of monikers for Iron Maiden, et cetera, because
Twisted
of the
Sister.
visual appeal of the way that they did it. And like you say, the Rolling Stones lips, you know, that plays itself immediately into something that's sellable. Whereas a band like Phish, as popular as they are, has never gone down that road, and you wonder why.
Yeah, they've got that kind of like stylized Phish logo, but it's not as ubiquitous as, say, the Stones lips or, I mean, what's the...
The Dancing Bears.
The Dancing Bears, exactly. And what is the most merchandised band of all time? Kiss. That stylized K-I-S-S logo is as recognizable as the faces on Mount Rushmore. And I read a statistic. They just had an interview with them in USA Today, and apparently Kiss has marketed to date 3,000 or more individual items. I mean, we've all heard about them, you know, from Kiss condoms, spelled K, the comic book that had their blood in the red ink, the coffin. Now that's something to take home to mama, huh? The Kiss baby beard. That last year they came out with a Kiss Mr. Potato Head.
Well, that's the Giles Band missed the boat on that one because the cover of the Freeze Frame album was Mr. Potato Head.
Yeah.
Patient on a
should have been stuff. A Giles Mr. Should've, Potato
we missed
Head.
It. We missed it.
Kiss just recently. Kiss also had a Rubik's Cube. What are we going to do with a Rubik's Cube with Kiss? I don't know. Keep it in the plastic and sell it on eBay in 10 years. Kiss just came out with Kiss M&Ms. I mean, you know, I guess that's the fifth sign of the apocalypse. You know?
I think one of the most genius merchandising ploys in rock and roll history is the mirror. You know, when in the early 80s, when I was little, you know, if you go to the state fair and if you could burst 2 out of 3 balloons, you know, with a dart, you would get like a Motley Crue mirror. Right. And then you'd look around and it'd be like hundreds, thousands of little kids with mirrors. And when I look back on it, I'm like, my God, there's like 1,000 5-year-olds carrying around Coke mirrors.
It's true. And as somebody who had to deal with the various myriad licenses that you could take on a band, when it came time to, when the Giles Band finally opened up and decided to do some stuff, the mirror guy came to my office.
Oh, the mirror was omnipresent.
So there
in the
actually
early
80s. Is a mirror guy.
Yeah, well, it's probably more than one, but this was the main mirror guy at that time. Came to my office.
That is
and
awesome.
Offered us a significant advance of, you know, of money to do the mirrors, and we did them, and you know, they sold very well.
What do you do with those mirrors?
Well, I look at myself in the mirror in the morning.
And well, you should. Yes.
Yeah.
I had a Kiss mirror.
Well, you know, yeah. I was at the state fair just recently, the Western North Carolina State Fair, and there are mirrors out there in some of the prizes, and there's also like just the photos of the artists. There's like stylized images of Tupac everywhere. You know, you pop the balloon, you get the Tupac. It's your.
Wow.
So, I mean, it goes back to what I was saying. If you make it, they will merchandise it. If you merchandise it, they will come. I mean, I got to tell you all a story. I was in South by Southwest in Austin this past March, which is merchandise city. Most of it just being handed out for free. Bands getting their names and logos on anything from matchbooks to condoms to these giant things that you have no prayer of getting on an airplane on the flight home. But they're handing them out to you. They usually have these girls on roller skates and miniskirts, you know, on the corner handing these things to you as you're walking past. So I'm down in the lobby of the hotel, and I see this guy holding up this thing. I thought it was a T-shirt. I said, okay, a T-shirt. I walk up and say, it's not a T-shirt. It's a pillowcase. And it was of this punk metal band called Affliction. And it was black and doomy looking. It might have even been a couple of skulls on it or something. But I said, where'd you get that? And he said, oh, it's right over there. And I looked over behind the checkout counter. There's a stack of these pillowcases. And I walk over there and said, could I have one of those? And he said, yeah, here, take it. So I take it home and give it to my kid, who is thrilled to death. He's got this soft cotton. Oh, it's so sweet. I want to lay my head on it myself. It's so soft and comfortable. But I just take this perverse satisfaction in thinking that I've got my kid sleeping on this free death metal pillowcase every night. I wonder what kind of dreams he has from that.
Well, I'm sure there have been a number of flops in the history of merchandising, going way back to the medicine shows and whatnot. But my favorite is one that you were talking about, Justin, with the Beatles.
Oh, the...
Well, I guess that one didn't come to be.
Yeah, I read it in... I used to collect... I was such a dork. I used to collect Beatles memorabilia in junior high, and I got, you know, the price guides and everything. And, I read in one price guide, the story in the price guide was that Brian Epstein, the manager of the Beatles, created a company, NEMS Limited, maybe, I think was the name. And they took care of the licensing company. You know, a guy would walk in and go, hey, I got this idea for a Beatles product. And they go, yay or nay. And apparently someone came in and offered to do a Beatles feminine napkin, quote unquote. Which according to this price guide, Epstein, he kind of toyed with the idea, but then eventually turned it down. However, from what I understand, there was Beatles toilet paper. So
you could wipe your booty on Ringo's nose, right?
They went moon instead of sun, I
guess.
Okay.
Yeah. That is awesome.
Here comes the moon. No, never mind.
another failed one. I guess this is kind of on the border of marketing and merchandising. It's a very famous one. Is Moby Grape? Mm. They released their debut album, and they were going to be like the toast of the San Francisco scene in '67, '68, and they had a big day where they released five singles off the album simultaneously.
There were two albums. They released two albums at the same time.
Well, that was the second.
Okay,
but then there was just the first, and they did
all
five
right.
singles. And then they had a big party in, I believe, Golden Gate Park that day, and released thousands of purple balloons. And then, you know, we're handing out balloons, and then the record just flopped.
There you go. Talking about the history of merchandising and music today on What It Is. For WNCW, I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Bob Hinkle, Fred Mills, Justin Farrar. Email us, whatitis@wncw.org.
Joe, can I buy a What It Is coffee mug from you or USB drive?
It's all in the works.
All right, man.